A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven,
in time
concentrate on
space.
Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
The lights are probably gone.
So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 287. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are talking about 1990. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon in England. Hello.
The BBC brought us this dystopian future series in 1977 and 1978. Two series with 8 50-minute episodes in each one. And it's a rather thoughtful look at an authoritarian state in Britain done in a way that is not that far from what we saw in the present at that time.
Yes, and it wouldn't be a drama about an authoritarian state if there wasn't some form of resistance. And so we have a charismatic journalist who is the visible face of the resistance, and who is in a sort of ongoing cat and mouse game with some of the high up figures in the British government in this strange version of 1990.
Yes, and who knows how much about what he does and whether they can prove it is sort of an ongoing question running in the background there.
So the setup, as we've said, it is Britain, it is 1990, and there has been a variety of terrible disasters of various descriptions, including a financial meltdown of some sort that's affected, as far as we can tell, the whole world. But of course, Britain has managed to get through it, but perhaps at a price, Brian.
Yes, that's right. There was apparently a period of martial law that had been imposed, and the government restored order, and they are now in this allegedly free version of the UK that we gradually learn is quite authoritarian and has, in particular, an organization called the Public Control Department, or the PCD, which is part of the Home Office and is this part of the government that is meant to help maintain order.
Yes, the PCD will be referred to constantly, and we'll see the sort of leader of the PCD and its various deputy leaders and so on in most of the episodes. They are the Stasi, in a way, of this future vision of the UK. They are the party from 1984. They are very much the strict and authoritarian rule of the UK, which has come through this variety of disasters. And we do learn other little bits and pieces as we go along. We'll perhaps mention from time to time the way that information about the world in 1990 is revealed to us. I think one of the things we find out is that there's only 3 newspapers and only one of them is independent. A newspaper called The Star, and one of its journalists, as we've suggested, is fighting the system.
Yes, there is a state-run newspaper and 2 allegedly independent newspapers, but only one that is actually independent in how it acts. So we should look at the characters in this.
Okay, well, let us start with noted British actor Edward Woodward, famous on British television for the long-running series from the late 60s and early 70s called Callan, but also famously or infamously as the police officer, the police sergeant in the film The Wicker Man. And as you perhaps pointed out, or you reminded me, Brian, that North American viewers might remember him as the TV version of The Equalizer, which was quite a successful series for him. 80s series, I think, Brian?
Yes, that was in the 1980s. It was a little later, but it was a big deal, and it starred Edward Woodward.
So here he is, Edward Woodward, playing Jim Kyle, a passionate and driven journalist. He is, I guess, a libertarian. He believes that the state shouldn't be controlling as much of the country as it does, in the ways that it does, in the restrictions that it's using. And he will be the constant constant thorn in the side of the PCD, both through his written articles, but also through his various, I suppose, dealings with the more hidden face of the resistance and his involvement in their various operations and models of resistance.
Yes, absolutely. I don't know if he's actually a libertarian, but he is someone who believes that the PCD is infringing on freedoms and that the government in this particular situation is far too restrictive on people, and he is indeed fighting against that.
Yes, I may have misspoke slightly. He's a sort of civil liberties, I guess, would be his main theme. Fighting back against the state.
I think that's about right. Controller Herbert Skardon, played by Robert Lang, is the head of the PCD, and he is a rather ruthless leader determined to stamp out resistance and to impose the policies of the PCD and the Home Office without limits or oversight. And he is, in a way, the villain of the piece, but there's something more interesting to him than him just being a villain, and there's a sort of almost cat-and-mouse game going on between Skardon and Kyle.
Yes, great character, and Robert Lang, perhaps not a name that you'd recognise, but if you see the actor, you'll find him very familiar from 70s and 80s television and more. Yeah, very interesting, and the dynamic between him and Kyle is a constant source of, you know, tension in both series.
Yes, it builds and develops and is one of the interesting features of this show.
So Controller Skardon has two deputies. Deputy Controller Deli Lomas, played by Barbara Kellerman, a civil servant who has, we find out, compromised her principles in a way. She's chosen the option of working for the PCD because that will mean that she can get her children into the right schools and they will be protected. So she has some conflicts in a way because, you know, she seems as not entirely 100% convinced like Controller Skardon is. She's often the go-between with Kyle and the PCD. And it's interesting because there is a certain amount of tension and possible romantic interest at times, which sets up more conflicts and some interesting stuff between Deli and Jim Kyle.
Yes, she's definitely an interesting character, and the dynamic between her and Kyle and her and Skardon is interesting as well. I think she may be the only character in the whole show who really has no moral compass at all. Some of them have highly questionable morals and ethics, but for her, I don't think there's even a question of ethics happening. And that adds something interesting to the dynamic. And she's another character with an interesting performance. She's a season one character. She does not appear in the second series.
Yes, there are some changes, but we'll come to that in our next episode.
We will indeed. The other deputy controller in the first series is Henry Tasker, played by Clifton Jones. And he is a stricter figure, very committed to the PCD cause, and less subtle than Deli Lomas. He's more an enforcer kind of character who wants to take the options to use force and to impose their agenda with very direct measures as much as possible.
Yes, and perhaps, you know, as you say, a more clear-cut character in a way without so many conflicts of interest.
Yeah, we had a lot of scenes in Series 1 with those three PCD characters, Skardon, Lomas, and Tasker, and you get a good dynamic of where everyone wants to go in order to meet their objectives. We do get some characters on the other side connected connected to the resistance as well. Dave Brett, played by Tony Doyle, is an import-export agent, and he is Kyle's right-hand man in the undercover activities related to the resistance. And getting things done, he is a bit of a shadowy character, but generally working for the right reasons and the good cause.
Yes, and as we'll learn, getting things in and out of Britain in 1990 is difficult. It's very restricted. And if you are organizing some form of resistance, having an import-export agent leading that turns out to be very useful at various points in terms of getting people in and out of the country, but also other, you know, important items. So, yeah. And Tony Doyle, another familiar face from British TV, and very good in this one, I thought.
Yes, absolutely.
So we do have lots of characters. As you say, we've got one more character in our main setup who's the interesting character called Faceless, or referred to as Faceless. The actor is Paul Hardwick. He is 1990s version of Deep Throat, basically. He is a government official who is sympathetic to Kyle and the resistance, and who frequently gives them information, or gives Kyle information. And especially in series one, we don't see his face. He drives a very distinctive bright green Citroen 2CV car. And if you know that little sort of mini French car, you'll remember that it has, rather than roll-up windows, it has folding windows. So the result of that is that if you have a screen on the top part of the driver's window, he can fold up his window, park next to Kyle in a multi-story car park or something similar, talk, and we'll see the lower part of his face, but we don't see the rest of him. So it is very much like Deep Throat in All the President's Men, meeting in car parks and never seeing his face, just hearing his voice. And of course, as I say, we'll see his face in the second series when the PCD start to close in on him. But of course, he provides invaluable sort of information to Kyle at several points. And it's also useful to us, I think, because it tells us a little bit of what's going on in each episode.
Yes, absolutely. He's this very shadowy character that we don't see much of, but is very important in series one. And in series two, he sort of becomes a quite different character, but also very different, where he is doing some of the same sorts of things, but we learn a lot more about him.
Yeah, fascinating. And as I said, there are, you know, as we've referred to, Brian, there are several other characters, and we'll talk a little bit about some of the series two characters later on as well.
Yes, absolutely. So Great Britain in 1990, as portrayed in this late 1970s show, as we mentioned, the UK has recovered from this economic crash, and they now assign status and sort of levels of status to people based on their value to society. And we have rationing for food and other goods. We also have privileges, which are assigned to different people at different levels. So privileges for housing and how big an apartment you're allowed to have and whether you're allowed to use a telephone or not, and all sorts of different things related to this are sort of carefully rationed out to different people by the government. In this way, the people's income and value sort of puts politicians and civil servants and certain people at the top of the food chain, as it were, and everything in what someone is allowed to do and how someone can live is controlled in how these different types of things are rationed out.
Yes, and we do see some of the lifestyles of the politicians and civil servants, and they seem to do very well under this system, whereas, you know, some of the other parts of the populace who we also see are clearly struggling with rationing and so on. And we pick up other little gems that tell us this is not, you know, not the Britain that we're familiar with. So, for instance, the House of Lords, we are told, has been completely disbanded, presumably because there was, you know, that wasn't based on status and necessarily your value to society. It may have been based on hereditary positions and so on. And in fact, we're told in one episode that the actual House of Lords is now a dining club for senior figures and politicians and so on.
We see that dining club quite a bit, actually.
Yes, it's an often meeting place for the PCD and various members of the government and so on.
We also get this idea that the unions have sort of been twisted into something where in order to have any kind of employment, you have to have a union card. And if you're working in some unapproved way, that union card can be revoked, which can leave someone with no possibility of at least legitimate employment.
Yes, all these things are tightly controlled by the PCD working for the Home Office. As I say, we pick up some other bits and pieces. We learn that the monarch is a king. We don't know who he is. We don't know what happened to Queen Elizabeth II. And of course, it wouldn't be a show about a future dystopia if the PCD didn't have some advanced computers and lots of surveillance equipment for basically spying on the populace and keeping an eye on what's going on. Because as we've suggested on several occasions, there is obviously resistance and they want to know what's going on. So the PCD, yep, they've got all the high tech, they've got the computers, they've got the listening devices, they've got the video cameras.
Yes, that's right. And what happens to the dissidents and criminals that they want to stop? Well, we learn about the adult rehabilitation centers, or ARCs, which they sort of claim are like psychiatric hospitals that are helping people and using drugs to their benefit, but in fact, it's more like brainwashing, and they are effectively breaking the spirits of these people and using very harsh treatments indeed, where people end up either being completely broken and obedient or end up dying in them.
Yes, there is you mentioned the unions, Brian. There's an episode where a union leader is in America and makes a very impassioned speech about denial of civil liberties back in the UK. And of course, the result is that he is then taken to one of these ARCs, one of these ARCs. And when we see him later in the same episode, he's a much changed and, as you say, broken and docile figure who makes statements on behalf of the government. So yeah, it's, you know, there are hints that the way they treat people in these centers is quite brutal.
Yes, we get that a number of times throughout the series, actually. Criminals also are jailed in some cases, and they can receive shorter sentences by agreeing to take misery pills. And the idea that there are misery pills and there are happy pills, and the government and the PCD decides who has to take what and when and how much, is something we slowly sort of find out that this is a part of how this society works, is that even people's happiness in life is something that is imposed upon them.
Yes, absolutely. Fascinating, the idea of misery pills and an imposed happiness as well.
And we also find out that there are severe cases where people can be designated as non-citizens, which involves all of their privileges and rights being revoked. And basically it means they become homeless and are shipped off to slums and, are forced into this very destitute, poor, homeless position that is very much dictated by the PCD and by the state.
And there is an episode called Non-Citizen, which will explain this more and show you the consequences of it. So, yeah, very interesting.
Kind of a spectacular episode. I think we'll get to it again later.
As we've mentioned, immigration and emigration from Britain in 1990 is extremely tightly controlled. And in fact, several episodes will involve or revolve about getting the sort of key members of the resistance or key figures in or out of the country. As you said, Brian, you know, your cards can be taken away from you. So if you lose your union card, you can't work and you lose all your privileges and status. There's identity cards, which again, you know, can designate you a non-citizen. And one of the fascinating things about 1990 as a TV show is that it doesn't set all this out for us in the first episode. In fact, it's a lot of it is sort of hinted at or explained as we go on through the two series. And you have to pay attention in a way to pick up some of the clues. And the way they've done that, you know, it's an interesting form of television, I think, Brian.
Absolutely. At the beginning, it seems like we're in a society that is not that different from our own, where there are restrictions on the press and on emigration, but not that much more than that. And we gradually learn just how bad things are and how horrible this situation is. It's quite powerful in the way that it shows how normal things look on the surface and how bad things are just beneath the surface.
Yes, clever the way they do it. And who'd have thought that 40 years later we'd still be arguing about immigration, Brian?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, we get this idea that is Kyle and the others, are they in a position where they can actually do something and make a difference? Or is it something that will just end and can never really go anywhere?
Yes, and will the PCD act and get rid of Kyle? Will they finally get fed up of his constant irritations? It's an interesting sort of tension throughout the two series between the PCD and Kyle.
So, getting to our production notes, 1990 was created for the BBC by the writer Wilfred Greatorex. Greatorex began as a writer on series like Patrick McGoohan's Danger Man. He also wrote the screenplay for the film Battle of Britain, but he may actually be best known and best remembered for creating the World War II drama Secret Army, which is still well remembered.
Yes, a very important show about the World War II and about the resistance and the line of getting prisoners of war, British prisoners of war and Allied prisoners of war out of occupied Europe. That was a great show. And of course, he starts off as an ITV writer, but as is often happened in those days, there was a fair amount of sort of transfer stuff going on. And he was lured to the BBC with a brief to create a show that reflected the concerns of the times in the late 70s. The show he produced, obviously, is 1990. It was produced for the BBC by a regular producer called Prudence Fitzgerald. And Greatorex's sort of concept for the show, his sort of pitch was 1984 plus six. Obviously, there are echoes of Orwell's 1984 and Nigel Neill's 1984, which, of course, we've covered. But there are also, I think, as we'll talk next time, Brian, there are quite a number of ways in which it differs, possibly by showing something that's very much closer to, you know, what was actually happening in Britain at the time.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that was quite deliberate that it did not have telescreens or, you know, the Big Brother posters everywhere. This is not a sequel to 1984 or set in the same world or universe as 1984. It's its own show, but the concept and the name sort of comes from that echo of 1984. So Edward Woodward was already well known for the gritty spy drama Callan, where he portrayed a sympathetic character within a rather ruthless Secret Service organization. So he was going to be a big part of this show when he was on board. Greatorex himself wrote 8 of the 16 episodes over series 1 and series 2. There were a number of different directors who worked on 1990. Peter Sasdy, who we remember from the Stone Tape, was one of them who worked on this show.
Yes, another little connection there that I always like to find. And of course, we're portraying 1990 looked at from 1977. And I thought they did this quite well. Slightly altered fashions, particularly I saw some of the men's tailoring and the suits are slightly different and look just, slightly otherworldly in a way. Perhaps, a fashion that never actually quite happened. And of course, the PCD has got all the technology. So their offices have computers where they can monitor what they're seeing and listening to. And they've got, there are some spy tech devices, particularly watches, which act as listening devices for them as well. So, not a hugely sort of futuristic science fiction-y type of show, but it's done again quite subtly to show the differences, to tell us that this is a very different Britain.
And I think that helped make it become not as dated as some shows dealing with sort of a lot of the gadgetry and things are. Of course, it is somewhat dated, but I think there are other things from the same time period that become much more dated. 1990 was first broadcast on Sunday, September 18th of 1977 on BBC Two at 8 p.m.
Yes, and interestingly, I don't know if they did this quite often back in the 70s, but the second episode went out the next night. So the Monday night, you saw the second episode, and then after that, it sort of dropped into its regular Monday night slot on BBC Two. I don't know, nowadays we're sort of familiar with shows being streamed over several nights, but that seems unusual to me for back in 1977. And of course, there's limited information about it, but we do have something from the Radio Times Genome Project, which is helpful.
Yes, the Radio Times included this quote from William Pitt: "Necessity is the plea for infringement of human freedom. It is the argument of tyrants. It is the creed of slaves." And the creed of slaves is actually the name of the first episode. So there were some interesting things there. And possibly having 2 episodes on consecutive nights at the beginning with a series that sort of slowly reveals itself and reveals the world of 1990, that may have helped in gaining viewers and so on.
Yes, I mean, what I don't know is how much advertising and sort of trailering there was before the broadcasts, and whether there was any more explanation about what this series was going to be. It would be interesting in a way to hear the announcer's introduction to the shows, which was very common in those days, that the BBC announcer would actually tell you something about what you were going to see. But there you go. We know it was sold abroad, so, 1990 was, like many shows, sold to overseas networks, but as far as we can tell, never repeated on British television.
We do know that it was successful enough to get a second season, so after those 8 episodes of Series 1 in 1977, a second series with another 8 episodes ran in late 1978.
And the other thing we sometimes look at is spin-offs from our TV shows, and we do know there were 2 books. Wilfrid Greatrex novelised his scripts for 2 of the episodes, so there are 2 paperback books out there. You can find them, as ever, on the secondhand markets. We haven't been able to get hold of them or, had the chance to look at them ourselves. But they're out there. And certainly the cover of the book is, I think, featured on the Wikipedia page showing, Edward Woodward as Jim Kyle up against a police van as he's been frisked and interrogated on one occasion.
Yes, very interesting. So we should talk about the availability for this one.
So Region 2, as ever, we're lucky because it survived in the BBC archive for all those years, didn't get repeated, but we did get DVD releases. Initially, it came out from the company Simply Media, and it came out as 2 separate DVD releases for Series 1 and Series 2. And I think that was about 18 months or so ago, Brian, when that happened and it was announced.
It's something like that. It is fairly new that this is available on DVD.
So just the 8 episodes on each disc. You can't, there's no extras, I'm afraid. They were selling at £12 and £10, respectively, for the two series here on Amazon.co.uk. But now, thankfully, there's an all-in-one box set, which gives you both series for the all-in-one price of £15. So quite why they did it, yeah, I suppose they wanted to spin it out and earn a little bit more money by doing two separate releases, but now a third release that includes the whole thing. However, over in Region 1...
In Region 1, there is no release. So in North America, you're looking at importing that Region 2 set from Amazon.co.uk and using a region-free DVD player to look at it.
Okay. It's a shame, as ever. You know, the difficulties you have getting hold of some of this stuff in Region 1, Brian.
Well, sometimes it works out that way. So next time, we will look at some of the subjects covered in the episodes in a bit more detail, and we will look at some of the changes and new characters and different things they did with Series 2.
Yes, we have to talk about Series 2, but we'll also muse briefly on 1970s British television and the dystopias of 1970s TV, which in itself is a fascinating subject, but we'll perhaps spend just a couple of minutes on it next time, Brian.
Yes, there are definitely some things we can compare it to there, for sure. In the meantime, you can find us at BritishInvaders.com or join our Facebook group to take part in some of our conversations there. Always fun. If you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find us there.
And if you search for British Invaders, you may also find us at the Voice of Geeks Network, where we are one of several podcasts to go out there. We do Mondays and Tuesday nights, but there's lots of other interesting shows for you. Check it out at vognetwork.com.
Absolutely. Always good things going on there. So thank you for listening. And this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you as ever. And until next time, it's Eamon in England also signing off.